I am Duncan MacLeod, born 400 years ago in the Highlands of Scotland. I am immortal, and I am not alone. For centuries we have waited for the time of the gathering, when the stroke of a sword and the fall of a head will release the power of the quickening. In the end, there can be only one.
Here we are, born to be kings, we're the princes of the universe.
And welcome into Let's Watch Highlander. This is Let's Watch Highlander, Season 1, Episode 22, The Hunters. And yeah, season finale of season one, and with you on this journey through the seasons of Highlander, I am your host Travis, aka TV's Travis, and my co-host is Audie. And Audie, how you doing this week?
Doing good.
Good.
Doing good. It's cold here, but
yeah, it's cold here. It's cold everywhere right now. So we're at the end of season one. So Duncan and Tessa are having a bit of fun on the barge when Duncan.
Yeah, they are.
Feels the presence of another immortal. It turns out to be his old friend Fitz. And Fitz has come to Paris because he's concerned with some recent events. Seems that there are some immortals going missing at a rather alarming rate, more than you would normally think, even in the time of the gathering. One of them, who's going by the name of Thackeray, had told Fitz he had something really important to show him, and then just vanished, and Fitz couldn't find him. So he was heading to Paris to talk to Darius. Duncan remembers that Darius had recently told him about a dream he had had involving Thackeray going missing and had something to do with his death. So, when we cut to some men get out of a van and enter Darius's church, and we see Darius with a look of concern as he hears somebody coming in. Duncan and Fitz are trying to call Darius. When he doesn't answer, they get concerned. They head to the rectory to see him. Just before they get there, the men come out of the church and leave. Duncan and Fitz get out of the car. They don't feel the presence of Darius, which really concerns Duncan because he never leaves. They go inside, and lo and behold, they find Darius dead inside the church. And the men are just gone. So this obviously raises some pretty big concerns from Duncan and Fitz as they realize that no immortal could have done this. They wouldn't break that rule. So they head back to Fitz's hotel, and when they get there, they're attacked by some men. Looks like the same men that attacked Darius. There's a scuffle, a chase. They run them down. Duncan catches one of them, and before the man can talk, he commits suicide. And Duncan notices a tattoo on his arm. The symbol on the tattoo reminds him of something, and we get our flashback. Flashes back to Duncan and Fitz a couple of hundred years earlier and a run-in with a similar symbol. So we come back and Duncan realizes that Fitz has been taken. He finds his pipe, and the men had captured Fitz, took him off in the van. So Duncan, being upset, is trying to figure out who killed Darius, what's going on with Fitz. This is really concerning him. He and Tess have a small argument, nothing real major, but she in her upset and scared state, cuts herself. And while Duncan is tending to her, she mentions something about, you know, Darius giving him information, which makes him kind of realize that he should go back to the rectory. So he heads off to go try and find anything he can. And we get a montage of remembering the character of Darius, a little clip show type of deal, and it's actually pretty cool remembrance we're going to talk about a little bit more. After which Duncan finds a tome, this old leather bound book with the same symbol on the inside of it, written in ancient German, and I think there was probably some other languages in there, but it was primarily ancient German that he mentions. So Duncan comes to the realization that these men, this is some sort of secret order. They observe, they watch immortals, they know about them, but they don't actually interfere with anything. Or at least that's what he's gathering from the book. He seems to think that they don't interfere until they decide they're going to kill an immortal, but they don't interfere with immortals fighting each other. He's out on the barge with Tessa when he spots a car drive up, so he and Richie pull a little kind of distraction. They knock the guy out, and they move the barge. And Duncan is using that as a ploy to follow the man back to wherever he's coming from. Meanwhile, Fitz is being held by these men who determine that he is an immortal. They didn't actually know, which I found was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And then he finds out that they're going to kill him. They're going to behead him with a guillotine they have in the basement of wherever they're staying. Duncan manages to arrive, fights the group of men yet again, and confronts the guy that's leading them, who tells him that they seek to kill immortals because we will not be dominated, and there is no greater power than the will of man. Duncan does kind of overpower him. The men take off, most of them. Duncan does rescue Fitz, and they get away. And we end the episode with Duncan, Tessa, Richie, and Fitz holding a memorial for Darius, and they spread his ashes on the Seine River. And that ends season one.
Mm-hmm.
Mead. The honeyed nectar of the gods. Haven't tasted this since King Richard's day. Where on earth do you find it?
Darius brews it himself.
Oh, brother Darius.
So special guests this week, we actually have three to talk about. And I want to start with Hugh Fitzcairn, who's played by Roger Daltrey. He's an old friend of Duncan's. He's a real affable, friendly kind of guy. Loves women, loves smoking his pipe. And that's really all we know about him. He's not a super in-depth character in this episode. However, because it's Roger Daltrey and that guy's just got charisma coming out of his charisma, he's extremely likable.
Yeah, for sure.
Immediately there's a chemistry between he and Duncan in their few scenes together where it's funny because you can tell they're playing it as really good old friends, but like Duncan is half just sort of putting up with Fitz and half like, I really like this guy. So,
yeah,
you know, it's almost like they're extremely close friends, but at the same time, Duncan's like, yeah, I can't have more than a little time with you, and then I need some space.
Right.
Cause I mean, his introduction is great. He comes in and immediately is just laser focused watching Tessa, to which Duncan's like, so it's pretty great. But Roger Daltrey, now when this first aired, I didn't know Roger Daltrey by face. I knew his voice from listening to The Who growing up. But when I rewatched it a second time, as I was more closer to like kind of my early 20s and it was in syndication runs a lot, I picked up on who he was immediately. And I thought it was really cool to have the lead singer of The Who in this. And obviously we've talked we've talked at length about the fact that there's a big crossover between rock stars and Highlander for some, and I think it all dates back to the first movie and having Queen do that soundtrack.
Sure.
And the show really leans into that, and it's great because Roger Daltrey is yet another of those. He's one of the better rock star actors that they've had in the first season.
Very much so.
And it's fun to have that with somebody who isn't an evil immortal also. Because we had Xavier St. Cloud, we had Joan Jett, and they were bad guys. So this was cool to have this character be somebody that is friends with Duncan. And Daltrey is just a delight.
Oh my gosh, yes. The funniest thing is I know him more from Highlander than from The Who. Like, I didn't grow up listening to The Who. Like, I had no idea who they were, pun intended, until later.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I've come to, you know, I kind of know their songs. I'm going to be honest, I'm not that much into The Who as to having listened to them a lot.
That's fair.
I couldn't pick out one of their songs. Nothing against them. I just didn't have that much exposure to them.
You probably know at least a couple of their songs if you watched any episode ever of any CSI show.
Sure.
Because they got used for the opening credits for that. The thing with The Who is they were just not, even if you weren't a fan of The Who, you've listened to a ton of bands that were influenced by them. They were such an influential group because it was these four really interesting personalities that just worked together so well. And Daltrey is that. He's a big personality. He was when he was on stage and is still on stage. And he is in his acting. He's acted in a couple episodes of CSI. He's done a few episodes of Highlander, which is spoiler alert, Fitz comes back, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I like,
which is how I remember him and know him and stuff. Like how I know him is from Highlander, and how I like him is that guy from Highlander is one of Duncan's best buds.
Yeah. And it's great because they don't overuse him. He'll pop back up here and there throughout the series. And it's nice, but it's a fun character to have. And Daltrey is just, he has this it factor to him that works not only on screen, but then opposite Duncan too, that I think is really great. And of course he's got the great line after Duncan rescues him of, you know, the women of the world, thank you. Cause he's just, he's a ladies man, and they make sure, you know, he's a ladies man.
Yeah. He's got a couple good lines in here.
Yeah. I really enjoyed him for a character who is not on screen a ton, but is still kind of the focus of the episode, because he basically becomes the damsel in distress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he spends half the episode shackled up and Duncan has to rescue him. Which is, you know, is interesting in its own right. But yeah, I really think the character of Fitz needs to be somebody like a Roger. Like, just Daltrey just has the thing that makes Fitz come alive to me.
Right. And it's just his being a performer like that.
Mm-hmm.
He managed to translate that well into acting. Not all, you know, rock stars can do that. We've seen it, not so much in Highlander, but other, you know, shows and stuff where they've come in and it's like, you're a stale cracker. You're not acting.
Well, we compare him to somebody we saw just a few episodes ago in Martin Kemp in Avenging Angel. Martin Kemp is a musician and an artist in that right, and from Spandau Ballet, and he'd done plenty of stuff prior to this, even a little bit of acting, but he felt stiff and he felt forced with what he was doing and the characterization he made of that guy, whereas Daltrey feels natural. He just sort of lets his natural charisma take him, and he plays Fitz very loose and very affable, and I like that.
Yeah.
Now, we had a return of Werner Stocker as Darius. However, all his footage in this is archive footage, because sadly Werner Stocker had passed away before they could film this episode.
Mm-hmm.
That's partially why we hadn't seen him for a few episodes, and we'd made mention of, you know, the fact that Darius was severely lacking, and there were moments that normally Duncan would go to him, and it was an unfortunate situation of his illness had just taken over, and sadly he passed away. So they have the nice montage moment, which I really appreciated and really liked.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just such a bummer. It was a great character that I really feel like was going to be integral to the rest of the series. And they were building those first few episodes. They were really building him up to be somebody that Duncan could go to and was going to be around for a long time. And real life got in the way and took him too young.
Yeah.
And far too early in the series, and kind of forced their hand to change. I'm sure change some things that they had, you know, long term plans on.
Sure.
But, you know, it's unfortunate because, again, Werner Stocker he had a cool presence to him. And it's just a bummer that he really only got to be in like three episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the
sense that not only are they, like with the different montages, not only are they saying how cool a character Darius was, but I really get the feeling going through the series the way we did, talking about behind the scenes stuff the way we have so far, that this episode is about Werner Stocker as much as it is Darius.
Oh, 100%.
And them being fans of him as an actor and wanting to showcase, you know, some of the last things he was able to do.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, it was as much a love note to Darius as it was Werner Stocker, and much deserved.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's unfortunate. He was not that old. I think he was only in his 40s.
Yeah.
So it's just such unfortunate. And then we had one other special guest I did want to mention. It was Peter Hudson, plays James Horton. Now, he's credited as James Horton. You never actually learn his name in the episode. He never says it. No one ever calls him that. All we know about him is he hates immortals. He's got the few lines at the end talking about how evil they are, rallying mm-hmm. his troops, talking about wiping a blight from the planet and all this kind of stuff. So he's straight up like just evil almost evangelical in his devotion to hating immortals.
Yes.
And he's a very charismatic person that can rally these people, but we just don't know anything about him yet. Now, the cool thing is, he's coming back. We're going to see him again.
Mm-hmm.
What I like, though, is he's a credible threat as a mortal to Duncan and Fitz and all of them. More so than others, because we learn that he's got information. He doesn't just know that immortals exist. He knows their history. At least we're led to believe that he does. And we'll find out later just how much he knows. But he makes for a credible mortal threat. And that is something that so far in season one, there weren't really any credible threats that weren't immortals to Duncan.
Right.
So, and that credibility comes not only from his information, but also just the passion with which he's carrying himself. He doesn't care. He doesn't care about the rules of immortals, obviously, as he kills Darius on holy ground. Now, what this tells us is that an immortal dying on holy ground is not the problem. It's the fighting on holy ground that creates the issue. Now, why that is, we're probably never going to really know the reason for that. But, you know, again, it's world building and it's background and it's stuff that just kind of adds flavor to the mythology.
And it's definitely one of those things where, like, okay, so we know immortals know each other from the Tingle. And so that's what they focus on. They don't care about regular mortals so much coming for them because they know mortals don't know what they're doing.
Yeah,
but these mortals do. Yep. These mortals know their weakness. They know the immortal, quote-unquote, kryptonite of taking their heads, and that's dangerous information.
It is, and they're not afraid to gang up on an immortal instead of a one-on-one fight. They're not afraid to attack them on holy ground instead of following the rules, and they aren't afraid to use weapons like a stun gun to incapacitate an immortal. So, you know, that's three things right there that make this a very credible and very real threat to Duncan and the rest of the immortals. So, all in all, a really good pack of special guests in here that nobody really felt short change. Now, some of that is because they didn't have to film anything new with Werner Stalker. But even so, it's just nice to have three fairly important side characters that all get time without feeling like they're taking too much away from our main characters.
Right. Yeah, they did a good job of putting everybody together, giving them enough face time, but also not taking away. Like, this was a very well written and edited episode for sure.
Definitely.
My instinct tells me we should leave.
Since when have you been bothered by a good fight?
Oh, it's not the fight I hate. It's the waiting for it.
So we did get a flashback. Actually, we got like one and a half flashbacks, I'm going to call it. So we get a flashback as Duncan sees the tattoo on the guy's wrist. It takes him back to a moment with Fitz where they were. And this was quite a while ago because Duncan still has his Scottish accent going. The two of them were running protection of some kind for a duke or some sort of lord. They don't really get into it a whole lot, but Fitz is concerned and wants to take off because they got the guy where he's supposed to go, and his instincts are telling him to leave, and Duncan doesn't want to quite leave yet. There's a joke about, well, maybe it's not the lord, maybe it's his daughter that you're interested in, and they get attacked, and what we see is we see a man following them wearing the same symbol on like a giant pendant. You know, very much on display, which
obvious about their secret society.
Yeah, I have some thoughts about that we'll talk about in a little bit. But following them, and he observes the fight that happens in kind of this little back alley before getting killed accidentally. And Duncan sees the pendant, you know, huge. It's like the size of a small dinner plate. And and that's what he remembers. So that's pretty much the whole flashback. There's not a ton to it. It looks fine. The costuming is really cool. I like that.
Yeah.
Actually,
definitely that French costuming.
Definitely. Like, oh, yeah.
Was it Musketeer times is the best way I could say it. I'm sure an historian would correct me like, well, okay, let me tell you.
Yeah.
But
this actually has probably the best choreographed fight sequence in the episode, too. The fight with the like two or three guys and Duncan and Fitz was really well done. You get to see Roger Daltrey has some fencing background.
Yeah.
So that's good. He looks great in there. Obviously Duncan doing his thing. Mm-hmm. So it was good. Now our second, I'm going to call it a quote flashback.
One more quick little thing I noticed about first flashback is just the continuity of Roger Daltrey Fitz likes a pipe.
Yeah.
they were hammering that pipe this episode, and even in the past he had a big old long old school pipe.
I like that. It's a fun little personality quirk.
It is. But it's something I noticed. I was like, they're definitely pushing the pipe angle and just that little quirk of his.
Yeah. Now we do get a second quote flashback. It's kind of flashback 0.5, but it's a montage of moments with Darius. So we get some moments of Duncan reflecting as he goes through the rectory and he picks up like the teapot, and we flash back to Darius pouring him tea made out of a mold for him. And we talked about it a little bit already, but I really liked it. It was a nice tribute to Werner Stalker. And it had our good music moment, which is they set it to Who Wants to Live Forever, because if an immortal dies, that's what you play in this series is Queens Who Wants to Live Forever. And you know what? I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
Not a one. Like, you know it's coming. It starts playing. And you know it's going to be there. But unlike the terrible use of Amazing Grace, like, it's a song that isn't overused because it's in this world. It's in this mythos that they use it a lot. Mm-hmm. And it just works. You get some nice moments of Duncan remembering stuff, and we get to see a good deal of Werner Stalker's kind of scenes. I especially like the moment. It's my favorite interaction of Duncan and Darius. And that is when Duncan shows up. It's during the episode with Xavier St. Cloud, and it's Duncan showing up and Darius being upset and unable to talk to him about it because of what was told to him in confession. I just really like that moment right before they play chess. And it all ends with Duncan finding the book that Darius hid for him behind his clan colors. So that kind of took some of the running time away from what may have been more flashback time, but I am okay with that because it really, he deserved to have that remembrance.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we had the first traditional immortal flashback, and then we had your typical television flashback that I think really worked.
Yeah, it didn't feel overly pandery or anything like that. Like, it was a well done flashback, and again, you're going to set it to Queen. I'm never going to complain about hearing Freddie Mercury, so.
Nope.
Yeah, it's all good.
Why'd you come back?
Well, Mac, I'd like to say I sense you were in danger, but the truth is there's this really cute blonde who works in the antique store.
Right, I never thought I'd be thankful for your libido.
So one of the things you get when you have a lot of guest stars is the fear that you're going to take away from your other co-stars. But Richie and Tessa are both in the episode, and they get some decent screen time. Richie maybe a touch more than Tessa. But it's solid work from both of them.
For sure.
It was another one of those cases where the first moment with Richie, I was worried was going to sort of set the tone because it was super cringy with him. And I get that. That's really on point for Richie. He's kind of oblivious, right? He's sort of this kid that he's still figuring it all out. But as soon as he realizes what's going on, he snaps right in. But there was a couple of really good moments that he had in this. One I really liked was his concern for Duncan's kind of mental and emotional well-being when he and Tessa, because he looks at Tessa and he asks her, he says, you know, what's it like for him to be friends with somebody for 200 years and then they're suddenly gone? Like, that's a heavy question. And this kid's supposed to be like between 18 and 20. So you can just imagine. I mean, I'm trying to think of put myself in that shoes being that age. I couldn't even wrap my head around knowing somebody for that period of time and then losing them.
Right.
And the other one was right after he puts his foot in his mouth about did somebody die, when Duncan and Fitz take off, the delivery of the line where Richie says, wow, I never thought I'd see one of the good guys lose.
Right.
Whew.
Mm-hmm.
That was, it's a heavy line, but the delivery of it by Stan Kirsch was great because it really shows that Richie gets it.
And that whole sequence of him coming in all bombastic and typical Richie funny guy, and then when he hears the news and he just turns it, and it's just like, okay, he is for serious acting so well right now. Like, mm-hmm. that is some solid stuff, turning that way. And like, you know, if you've ever lost somebody, you know.
Yeah.
The way it affects you, not just the way you're talking, but your whole body language. Like, he turned it on for that scene, at the very least, but it was just like, dang. Yep.
And again, you get that sense of the kind of brothership that's forming between him and Duncan, because mm-hmm. he is ready to help right away, and not in the way that he was kind of mid-season where it was like, yeah. No, it's like he's genuinely wants to do whatever he can. So when he says, hey, what can I do? And Duncan looks at him and says, hold the fort down. He doesn't bristle mm-hmm. at that at all. He's just like, I got it. That's what I'll do.
Right.
Whereas,
or even when Fitz tells him, look, appreciate it, young man.
Yes.
This is for me and Duncan. And he's like, cool.
Yep.
I know where I'm supposed to be right now.
Doesn't say a thing. And mid-season or early season, Richie would have been like, no, come on, I can help. So mm-hmm. it's showing maturity on his part. He also gets the fun moment of walking up to the car in the middle of the night and acting like he stepped in dog crap. Uh-huh. It's such a cheesy misdirection, but whatever, it works. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's like, what can we do? What can we use here? We've got this set. Mm-hmm. I did like, so Duncan is concerned for Richie because he realizes that these men don't know who the Immortals are necessarily mm-hmm. because of what happens with Tessa. We'll talk about in a second, but he asks where Richie is. So he goes to find Richie and ends up in a fight with all these guys in broad daylight, which is kind of crazy. But Richie shows back mm-hmm. up, and that was a cool stunt. Whoever did the stunt work for that, where he comes in on the bike and then lays it down and the guys jump over it, like that was a nice looking mm-hmm. stunt they did there. And then to see Richie, because it's cool to see Richie jump into the fight when he realizes what's going on. And then you get that nice moment of levity when they end it where Duncan's like, why'd you come back? Well, I want to say it's because I knew you were in trouble, but really there was this cute blonde I wanted to ask out. So, very on brand for Richie.
Duncan's line is great. Never thought I'd be thankful for your libido.
That is such a good line.
But now,
oh, go ahead.
I got to say, just that whole sequence, Duncan is, you know, holding his own pretty good against, what, 10 or 12 guys?
Yeah, it was somewhere between like 5 and 10 guys, yeah.
It was like way too many where it's like, okay, this is getting ridiculous. How good is Duncan? And then Richie shows up. But I love that Richie shows up, lays him out with his bike, headbutts a guy with his helmet on. Ooh. He starts fighting. And then him and Duncan just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the quintessential Iron Man walking away from the exploding tank.
Yeah.
In Iron Man 1. But they have that, like, cool guy. We're walking away from the fight.
Yeah.
Just to get away. And it's like, Richie, you just left your bike. And he's like, I know.
Yep, pretty much. Yeah, I wonder. I don't think he ever gets it back. But that headbutt with the motorcycle helmet. Yeah, that's true. That was the one. Even watching it today, I was like, oh, that's got to hurt. Because, man.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, he laid him out. So, yeah. It was good Richie work. Good work mm-hmm. from Stan Kirsch. Overall, and we're going to talk about this more next week, but
mm-hmm.
he really did a great job over the course of this first season, bringing a character who started off as an annoyance and really making him a solid character throughout mm-hmm. the series.
For sure.
Now, Tessa doesn't have as much screen time as Richie in the episode, but I feel like it was still some good work from her. Again, they didn't fall into the trap of making her the damsel in distress. They let Fitz be that.
Right.
Which I do appreciate that the show did. But she has two important moments. She has a moment with Duncan in the barge where she is concerned for him and he is visibly scared. And you see that mm-hmm. in him, in his reaction, in the fact that he snaps at her. And instead of it being some kind of melodramatic shouting match, she, you know, cuts herself. But that's enough to kind of snap him back and they calm down. Mm-hmm. And then she says, you know, maybe he left you some information or something. So that was kind of a fun moment because it didn't have to go the way that you would think, the like a melodramatic type of situation. I appreciated that.
Yeah, and once again, realistic relationship.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then you had the moment where she's out and about shopping and really kind of oblivious to what's going on when Horton stages a run-in in order to learn information about her. Now, granted, he's about as subtle as a chainsaw that's lobbed into a crowded room, but she picks up on it. She's not dumb. She realizes what's going on right away and immediately tells Duncan, like, yeah, this was that guy. He was weird. So I like it. She's not played as dumb or useless. She's a very strong character, and I appreciate that about her.
She's supportive when she thinks she can be supportive. You know, she's there for Duncan and everything. She has a little conversation with Richie about what's going on, admitting she has no clue what Duncan is possibly feeling.
Right.
No matter how much in their relationship they've talked about something like this, she's still admitting, I have no idea what this feels like.
Oh, yeah.
But she's still going to be there supporting him in any way she can.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we keep beating this drum. This is a real relationship of sometimes I'm going to snap at you because I'm frustrated, but then we're going to come back together and realize, yep, I'm frustrated. Yep, you're frustrated. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, not trying to resolve it, but just understanding it.
Yes. Yeah. It's one of the better written relationships I've seen on a show. Period. So
again, it's still hilarious that a show about people hacking each other's heads off has one of the best written relationships.
Yeah, it shouldn't work, but it does. You know, credit to Alexander Vandernoot too for the way she plays Tessa. Also, she had the coolest costuming in the entire episode, and that was the apron thing she was wearing when she was working on the barge. Because it had like legs. It was like a combination of an apron and chaps. And I'm like, that's brilliant. You got a long apron, but you still have full range of motion in your legs. If you're a sculptor, man, you need that. So that was cool. Yeah. Just solid work from Tessa once again. I just really like her as a character and Richie growing. And it's a bummer that we're going to move away from Paris because I feel like she got better when we got to Paris. In part because it felt less like a fish out of water for her. Although, you know, well, it wasn't like early episodes she was bad at all either.
Right.
I just feel like they ramped up the story. And part of that is the storytelling got better when they got to Paris. So I think that plays more into it than anything else. But yeah, it was good work from both of them once again.
Yeah.
We have won a great victory. We have destroyed a malignant evil that has walked this earth in the form of a man for the last 2,000 years.
So our final fight in this episode is a little bit different because it's not Duncan against an immortal. It's Duncan against a bunch of guys. And, okay, was it me or did the set of that finale of the episode look eerily similar to the set that they ended Avenging Angel in?
A little bit.
Like that same kind of underground castle-y type of thing.
Yeah.
So
they probably found a location and just used all of it they could in every way they could.
Yeah, I'm sure. Overall, though, I have to say the fight ending, the kind of action sequence that ends this episode is a little bit lackluster. It's not the strongest of the series by any stretch, and it's not even the strongest in this episode. It just felt it felt a little sloppy at times in both the blocking and the staging of where people were. And also just the choreography of what was going on. Part of that is the jacket that Duncan's wearing and the kind of his costuming doesn't give him a lot of motion to move around in. Yeah. It felt really weird.
Even though he's all over the place.
Yeah. It also, like, the way he's moving around in the space and the fact that, like, only one guy is coming after him at any point felt a little strange, too. Because there's probably four or five guys that he fights, but it seems like somehow he manages to run up a flight of stairs and only one person follows him. You know, it's just,
well, he makes mention of that, like that he's trying to weed them out and take them out one by one. And he says, you know, it's a lot harder when it's just one-on-one, isn't it, guys?
True. But I felt like
in the script, Duncan.
Yeah. I felt like the fight earlier in the episode with multiple people was staged and done better. Now, granted, it was outdoors.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it was more open area. But, you know, that one at least felt a little bit better. Even there, again, Adrian Paul's costume for that scene kind of hurt him a little bit because it felt like he didn't have the motion to be able to move his arms up enough or his legs up enough. Mm-hmm. He was a little restricted. But that was a much better choreographed scene, although narratively it felt weird because they're attacking him in broad daylight in a courtyard with a bunch of people watching. Like, they just didn't care. And, like,
make it obvious that people are coming, hey, what's going on? Somebody's fighting.
Yeah. Yeah, that felt like, so while it was a better choreographed scene, narratively it just felt weird. Like, these guys are super secretive, and all of a sudden they decide that they're going to just attack in broad daylight. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. But we'll forgive it because of Richie's excellent entrance.
Yes. Yes, that had the best stunt work in the episode. So,
coming in with a motorcycle, sliding under him, headbutting guys with his helmet on.
Using nunchucks. Like, he was all about it.
Like, I love them walking away and him just holding his helmet, staffing the nunchucks. Like, yep.
Yeah.
We got this.
Pretty much, yeah. I did enjoy that fight. The final one, it could have been better. I also feel like the final one, they had to get some exposition out. They had to give some reason why this was going on, because Duncan at that point hadn't had any interaction with Horton at all.
No.
So, and I do like that. I also like Peter Hudson's deliveries as Horton, because he's just bug-eyed, crazy dude.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun. And then, of course, the final...
He's just crazy, and Duncan is piss crazy.
Yes. Yep. And yeah, so, like, overall, it's a fun little ending to the episode, but I kind of wish that choreography had just been a little bit better. I also feel like it almost seemed like they were a little enclosed in that set.
I was going to say, I wonder if this was, like, not a set, but an actual location, and they just didn't have as much room as they thought they did to really shoot it the way that I think it was choreographed.
That could be. Because
it definitely felt weird, some of those shots. Like, come on, can we not do better? And then if you're in an underground place like that, you probably can't do too much better.
Yeah.
But they want... it's one of those things where they probably wanted the location more than they wanted to get really good shots.
True. Yeah, that's a good point. So, yeah. You know, also, decent.
I loved... that scene starts with them getting Fitz and unchaining him and bringing him down to the guillotine. And one of my favorite lines was, like, just before they get there, is like, boy, these guys are into Dungeons and Dragons, aren't they?
Yeah. That one was pretty nice. Good. And this would have been a time when Dungeons and Dragons not popular like it is today.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that
a little bit of a dig there.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me. I hope that sword isn't for me.
It is if you keep staring.
Hey!
Oh, forgive me, my lady.
And so that was the season finale of season one, The Hunters. I feel like it was a good wrap-up to the season, personally.
Yeah.
You know, you got a nice new threat to Duncan and his family and immortals in general.
Right.
We're getting a mortal threat that they leave enough to be questioned. Why are they doing this? Other than, you know, well, we won't be dominated, but, like, how are they getting this information? We don't know anything about that. What's the symbol mean?
Right.
All that kind of stuff. So there's some new and interesting things there. We get to meet a new friend of Duncan's, a good friend. Unfortunately, we also lose one. And the loss of Darius really does make some changes to the show. And it's one of those what ifs. Like, I really wonder what if Werner Stalker had not gotten ill, how the series would have been different and how his character would have evolved and how Duncan would have been a different character. Because we see Duncan as the very virtuous man that he is, but he still needed help. He still needed that console that he would get from Darius.
Right. And you wonder how much more of Darius's past would have come into play.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
As old of an immortal as they say he was.
Yeah.
How much that would have happened. Who knows? Maybe we would have seen him come out of the church and start fighting again for some reason.
Yeah. They could have definitely worked something in where, you know, whatever the threat is enough that Darius is like, all right, I can't stand by and let this happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're going to be left with those what ifs, but it is what it is. You know, the show did go on and it did, it definitely got better from this point on.
Mm-hmm.
I do have to say, I like the introduction of the Watcher tattoo. We're not giving a whole lot away by calling it that. This show is old enough that spoilers are out the window. Okay. But,
and we're getting there.
Yeah. However, I will say that the makeup work for the tattoo is pretty bad. Like that just looks like purple Sharpie drawn on someone's wrist. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like a tattoo at all.
Yeah. So, it's definitely like the stamp you get before you go into a club or something.
Yeah. And that's just a limitation of the makeup they had at the time. Cause if you look anything from that era, like the way that that style of stage makeup has gotten better over the years to where you can have somebody in a movie or a show now and put fake tattoos on them and you wouldn't be able to tell that they're fake. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it's a solid end to the season that we get to see some growth throughout the season from Richie. We get a ton of solid work from Tessa. Duncan is good. He gets better as the series goes on too, which is really nice. But it's a big turning point for the series because we're going to, starting with season two, there's some fundamental mythology that changes in this show. And this was the seed for that with the hunters.
Right.
And they're,
we start to learn a lot more about everybody. We learned that immortals can take a taser pretty good.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe like, that's just Duncan. Dang. Who knows? He's a tough guy.
That's true.
Yeah, the hunters in their terrible, terrible minivan, by the way. That thing was... I mean, I thought Duncan's little Renault was ugly, but that minivan was ugly.
Yeah, and just the way they all... Except for, like, the big fight scene, anytime you saw them, they were wearing some kind of sport coat, suit jacket thing.
Yeah.
No matter what kind of shirt they were wearing. It was like, that's a choice.
I would say my only other kind of gripe... is this secret society gets introduced, and for as secretive as they have been, for us to not know anything about them and no immortals to really know anything about them prior to this, they're suddenly throwing all that secrecy out the window and just attacking immortals in broad daylight and all over the place at the hotel. Like, I get the church part of it, right? Because they go there looking for their chronicle and they just take out Darius, but nobody's there. But they attack Duncan and Fitz at the hotel in the hallway. Yeah. And then they attack him in broad daylight out in the street. And they attack Duncan again. Like, and then you get the flashback to the guy in whatever, you know, era France it was. He's not being very secretive. So it's one of those. It's always hard when you've established a show and then you bring in your secret society.
Right. Like,
Fringe did that really well. Right, because they planted the seeds of the Observer from episode one of that show. If you go back and ever rewatch it, he has cameos in every episode for like the first season or two that you never noticed, but he was in the background somewhere. Okay. So they had that plotted out. This season, when it started for Highlander, they did not have the Watchers in mind. So you have to kind of shoehorn them in, but. I'll let a little bit of that go. This is kind of a rogue group of these guys, and they've finally just decided that they don't care anymore. So,
not to mention, like, you could hand wave it saying they probably had somebody on the force or something who's a friend or paid off, and we, like, if we got into trouble, it wouldn't be a problem.
That's true, and that actually would work with what goes on in this episode because there's no police presence ever.
Mm-hmm.
And with how hardcore the cops in Paris were with Duncan from almost the moment he got there.
Yeah.
I could believe, like, you could tell me that they had some members of the police force in Paris and they're under their thumb and I would believe it.
Right.
So it works out. Yeah. This is a good episode and a good wrap up. It's a good way to end the season. A little bit of a cliffhanger, but not like a, oh, what's going to happen next type of cliffhanger, which is, I think partially because they may not have known at this point if they were going to get another season, but also like it's the kind of cliffhanger that doesn't feel like a cliffhanger. It's just, oh, there's some loose threads that now we've got more directions we can go in the future.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, this, this point in time of TV making, they didn't do a whole lot of cliffhangers like this.
Especially not when with season ones, right?
No, the one I can think of, and the only reason I think of it is because of how big of a show it was, is The West Wing. It was around here. They ended that on a big old cliffhanger. But I think that's one of those two where it was like it became such a huge show. They knew they were coming back for season two.
Yeah.
So they knew they could write season two, episode one after this.
And I think Star Trek did it a couple times. Next Generation had a couple of cliffhanger season enders, but that was an established show by that point. It had been a couple of seasons, whereas this was in its first season and it was in syndication, so there's no guarantee.
Yeah. Again, I'd say Star Trek. It's a big show that they probably knew they were coming back to wrap up that cliffhanger in the next season.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a show rare. Like Highlander, who knows?
It's true. So we don't have a new episode for next week in the traditional sense. Next week, we're going to do a recap of season one. We're going to give some of our favorite moments, some of the stuff that we didn't like so much. So that'll be worth it to come back and hear that. So that'll be next week.
Mm-hmm. And if you're listening to the podcast and want to come hang out in the chat with us.
Oh, absolutely.
That'd be a really good time to do it.
Now, if you are listening and you have a favorite moment, you have a favorite character, you have a least favorite moment or character or anything like that, hit either one of us up on Twitter. I'm TV's Travis at TVS Travis. And Audie, what's yours?
It's Oddly Normal One. And that's the number one, but spelled out. So.
Okay. So hit us up with your favorite Highlander moments. Tag it as, hashtag Let's Watch Highlander. And we'll mention those on the show next week as well. But definitely, this would be a good episode to come hang out in the chat in, because there's going to be a lot of fun discussion and back and forth, because we're not going to discuss our choices ahead of time so that we can kind of spring them on each other and see where we're
right.
So it'll be fun. I think you're going to enjoy it. So that's going to be next week. Our season one recap, getting ready for season two of Highlander. So once again, I am Travis, and Audie is with me, and we're going to take you through season two in a couple of weeks. But come on back next week, hear what we had to think overall of season one. And until then, remember that there can be only one. No, there's no episodes left in this season.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.